This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Right now, Ed Murphy, UVA astronomer, joins us in studio with an update on all things space. Ed, I always look forward to these conversations.
Oh, thanks.
Where should we start? Let's start with space junk, because when the last time you were here, we were talking about something that fell out of the sky and crashed through a home in New Jersey. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was a chunk of metal.
Yeah, and there was debate as to what is this thing? Nobody really knew, but you report to us now that, well, now we know what that was.
Right. It was just this big chunk of metal, weighed about 3/4 of a pound. It was about the size of your fist, and it came crashing through this roof in Freehold Township, New Jersey. Went through the ceiling, hit the wall, damaged the plaster, broke some tile in the bathroom, and the family found this and reported it to the police. And just looking at it, it was a solid chunk of metal. Some people looked at it and noticed that it was scorched on one side. It was damaged, what looked like entry into the Earth's atmosphere. So the first thought, it might be a meteorite. There are solid iron nickel meteorites that we find here on Earth. But an analysis showed that it was made of stainless steel, which is certainly not natural. And it was just a common alloy of stainless steel. So it's part of a spacecraft that entered the Earth's atmosphere and ended up crashing through this roof.
Is there any possible way of knowing what spacecraft this came from?
And no one has published which spacecraft it has come from. It's possible that the U.S. Air Force can track things generally that are bigger than about 10 centimeters in size, and this was probably less than half that size. The picture I saw on the internet looked like it was about the size of your fist. So it's probably too small for them to track it and have an actual orbit of it. If they had an actual orbit, they'd have probably already identified the object.
And you have told us before that these things fall constantly.
Yeah, about one object falls back to Earth every day of the cataloged objects that are out there.
But most of them aren't even recorded, because I would imagine that most of them land in the water.
Most land in the water or remote areas on Earth. You know, human beings inhabit a very tiny fraction of the surface of the Earth, so most of them just end up in the ocean.
So how big was this thing? You know, we've seen enough movies to know that something the size of a Volkswagen goes through our atmosphere and burns up and turns into like a little marble.
Right.
How big do we think this was when it started?
It probably wasn't much bigger than this. It's a really common misconception that big things burn down to little things. But things, when they enter the Earth's atmosphere, depending on their composition, may not burn up very much at all. Things that are made of very soft metals like aluminum that have low melting points might be completely consumed. But stainless steel has a very high melting point. And something like that, or an iron nickel meteorite, will make it down to the ground mostly intact.
See, I find that fascinating, because we're sort of brought up in America to believe that you can't get through that atmosphere without really, really burning up. But if I hear you right, well, it'll burn, but you go through so quickly that it may not burn that much. If you're a human being, you'll vaporize, right?
That's right, yes. But yeah, if you're a solid piece of metal, most solid meteorites like that make it all the way down to the surface of the Earth. Typically, for a metal meteorite, if it's bigger than a golf ball, it'll make it all the way down to the ground.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia. He's in studio waiting for your calls at 977-1070. Tell us a little bit about space junk, because I have seen a drawing before years ago in a newspaper where they put a dot where there's space junk.
Right.
And it is this continuous cloud all around the Earth. I mean,
That's
it's quite amazing.
Yeah, this year is the 50th anniversary of the launch of Sputnik. So we've been launching things into orbit now for 50 years. And as of April, the last time the numbers were published, there were 11,194 objects in orbit that we can track. Those are things that are bigger than 10 centimeters or bigger than 10 centimeters across. There are probably hundreds of thousands of objects that are smaller than that, probably millions of little tiny pieces of things in orbit around the Earth.
That is incredible.
And so
you have to plot anything you send up there. You have to take into account those things that are whizzing by.
Absolutely.
How fast do they go?
17,500 miles an hour is how fast you have to be going to orbit around the Earth.
And how is it that none of those things puncture the space station? Do we just have it set in a certain place so that it'll avoid that stuff?
Yeah, fortunately, where the space station is, or just space in general, is quite big. Even though there's 11,000 tracked objects up there, the average space between them is quite large. So close encounters with the space station are rare, but not unheard of. The space station has been moved to avoid orbital debris. The space shuttle has been moved to avoid it. They try and track all the big objects, and if a big object comes within a few kilometers of the space shuttle or space station, they will move it out of the way.
Let's talk about the space station, because I understand that a viewing is coming up here in just a couple of weeks, right?
That's right. There's a beautiful pass on June 4th coming up. It's 10 o'clock in the evening. The International Space Station will pass almost exactly straight overhead as seen here in Charlottesville. So
where should we look? What time and all that good
go
stuff?
Go out just after 10 o'clock, look in the northwestern sky, and you should see the International Space Station appearing, and probably the best place to see it is as it goes straight overhead. They've put some new large solar rays on the space station. It's been much brighter than it has over the last few years, thanks to these big solar rays. It's really quite bright when it passes overhead now.
UVA astronomer Ed Murphy is in studio, and you also mentioned recently, we were talking on the phone, you said that a sighting of Mercury is coming up, right? Which is incredibly rare, right?
It's very rare for people to get to see the planet Mercury. If you go out tonight after sunset and look west, there's this incredibly bright star in the western sky. It's actually not a star at all. It's the planet Venus. It's been hanging up there for the last few months, and it'll be visible for a little more than a month now to come. But on the last 2 days of May and the first 2 days of June, to the lower right of Venus will be this fairly faint-looking star, and that will be Mercury. Because it's much closer to the sun than we are, Mercury is never seen in the sky very far away from the sun. If you think about what happens at midnight you're facing away from the sun, so you're seeing things that are further out in the solar system than we are. Mercury's never visible in the middle of the night. It's only visible just after the sun sets or just before the sun rises.
And it's very low on the horizon, right?
Very low. It's just barely above the treetops. You have to have a good western horizon to see it.
Yeah. And wasn't this visible a few months ago?
It was. It was visible in the spring. It's a couple times a year you get a chance to see it in either the evening or the morning sky.
I can remember, Ed, I remember driving home on 250 West, and right when I was near the Birdwood Golf Course, uh-huh. as I looked out across the golf course, I had a great view, and then it